The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
No, you know what, Kelly? Let's do this. Let's talk about the minutiae of our job on the air. We were discussing our schedule and whatnot. I think people think it's really radio and television.
We got some scheduling to figure out over the next couple days. We're busy.
What is on my face?
I don't know. Like you're using that camera as a mirror.
Do I have a freckle on my face? I never even noticed that sometimes. Oh, whatever. It gets lost in my jowls, maybe. You don't see it. That's such an underrated word. I love jowls. You know what I mean? It's a good
jowls,
word.
Jowls, yeah.
How often do you use that thing, huh?
Never, yeah.
Unless we're talking about dogs. All right. With that, we were talking about DeAndre Hopkins and his destination. Obviously, the team that is favored is in the AFC South. So let's discuss this really quickly. So I've got thoughts. Obviously, I'm a Colts fan. So I do have thoughts about what the Colts' future ultimately brings. But at the top of the division is the Jacksonville Jaguars, who are the odds-on favorite to win this thing at minus 165, to win the conference at 12-1, championship at 25-1, win total of 9.5. I would say the Jags are what I qualify as a sexy team, right? A lot of people think that there's a high ceiling for Jacksonville after the way last year ended. Went on a pretty solid run, got into the postseason, came back against the Los Angeles Chargers, and won that game. Like we all know how it went last year. And so the thought is that there's some real potential here for Jacksonville. And I don't necessarily disagree. And I actually thought this, Kelly, so as we started the top of the division, the rightful favorites. One of the things that I kind of wanted to do with Jacksonville, they have by win projections, by win total projections, the 11th easiest schedule in the NFL, somewhere in that range. I do think there's a universe in which Jacksonville, much like the Tennessee Titans from a couple of years ago, come out and take advantage of an easy schedule and could compete for the top seed in the AFC.
Oh, like, absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like, yep. And I bring up those Titans specifically because if you remember that year, and obviously you have their schedule in front of you, we'll go over momentarily, but if you remember the year the Titans won it, every single number screamed at you, this team is not that good, right? They were getting ridiculous results, all that. But I think that there's a universe in which this schedule breaks for them to a point where they could take advantage of it and be a one seed in, like, number and record, but in terms of power rating, still below those teams like Buffalo, like the Kansas City Chiefs. And I don't think it's unrealistic for this to happen. I mean, you look at this schedule overall, there are some tough spots that they have to take care of, right? But for the Bills, for example, like all of their big boys, Chiefs, they get them at home. Bills, they get them in London, but it's the second week. It's consecutive London weeks where they're going to be there waiting for the Buffalo Bills, a small advantage in that regard. The other ones, they get the 49ers at home. They get the Bengals at home. So the tough challenges for them, the Ravens, at home, they're going to be able to, at the very least, host them. And again, conversations about home field, probably worth more than just about 1.5 points or so. It's not worth that much, but still an advantage nonetheless. You at least get to play them on your own territory for the most part. The other opponents, like their road games, really not terrible, right? The divisional games, of course. And then you look at some other spots on the record that, like, the rest of the time, Kelly, do you look at the schedule and go, you know, there's a lot of opportunity here for this Jacksonville team to, again, just build up a record against some lesser opponents and look at those last 3 weeks as well. If we're right about the Tennessee Titans kind of folding by the time we get to midseason, whatever it's going to be, or just look at the back end of the schedule overall, that three-week stretch against the AFC North is going to be pretty tough, right? Bengals, Browns, Ravens. But if you start at week 11 to go on, Titans, Texans, then Bengals, Browns, Ravens, and then Bucks, Panthers, Titans – like, that could be a stretch where you, what, lose two of the three? You know, take one of those AFC North games?
Sure.
And all of a sudden, you're like, hey, man, like, we're cooking with fire. Like, we could get something here in terms of a pretty good record. Again, we're talking about odds to win the AFC one seed. You know, you want, like, double digits somewhere in that range. Like, that's something I think that is worth looking at for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah, I completely agree. That is – let me just make sure I'm not misremembering anything. Yeah, that is the only NFL future bet I've actually made so far is the Jags to win this division.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm very high on them. I think your points of everything regular season are right. I think they're interesting to look at for, you know, over win total, maybe over alt over win total, the number one seed in the AFC. I don't think that they stand a chance once they get to the playoffs, but this is all about the division that they play in. And these three other teams just not being anywhere close to them, in my opinion. And the Titans, we kind of talked about it last segment. I really think that's going to end up being a rebuilding project midway through the year. I would think their biggest threat in the division in all likelihood, is probably your Indianapolis Colts. But, you know, we look at that schedule again. You get to play the Colts early. You get both those games out of the way early. Yep. So if you think there's going to be a curve for Anthony Richardson learning the offense there, I think it's better to play him early, and you're getting those games, both those games out of the way in the first 6 weeks. You can even throw Stroud in there. They play Texans week 3 a little later on as their second game. But I think that part's big when we talk about that team. The Colts, I don't know how you feel about them, but they would probably be my pick for finishing second in this division. But, like, I think it's going to be a Jacksonville runaway. And even I bet it at minus 160. I think it's still around, like, minus 165, 170. I think it's still worth a bet.
Yeah, I would agree. Indianapolis, so there's obviously a lot of easy comparisons to make with Anthony Richardson and Justin Fields. And the fact that, you know, Richardson could have a Fields-like season like he did last year. Fields was electric on offense, absolutely tremendous on the ground, and helped make that Bears team a little bit more fun in terms of the way that they were scoring. However, of course, they finished with the worst record because the defense was atrocious and he wasn't getting much help. The argument you make here for Indianapolis is he could have the Fields season, but with a much better roster around him than what Justin Fields had last season. Yeah. You know, he's got a dominant backfield mate in Jonathan Taylor. You know, he has an offensive line that still has some talent there, a skill position group that is a little bit better than what the Chicago Bears had a season ago, and a defense that has some pretty decent talent on it, and a coaching staff, too, geared offensively that could maximize some of his talents as a quarterback. I would agree with you. Am I rushing to go bet over the win total for Indianapolis? I'm not entirely sure about that. But I do think on a week-to-week basis, if it's going to be Anthony Richardson to start, there is some intrigue in looking at an Indianapolis team that's going to be an underdog, I think, in every game but one so far this season as it projects out, to look at, like, betting them against the spread somewhat regularly, because I think they'd be a lot more formidable to certain opponents than you would think. And the first portion of that schedule, you have some interesting opportunities for Indianapolis. You know, you mentioned the home game against Jacksonville. You have to go to the Houston Texans, which is a winnable game because those are two evenly matched teams, a coin flip spot. On the road against the Ravens is going to be, you would think, a pretty solid number to catch against the Baltimore Ravens, barring anything crazy in the first couple of weeks of the season. Home against the Rams is winnable. Home against the Titans is winnable. Like, if you go through the schedule, there are opportunities for Indianapolis to go over that win total. A lot of it depends on, of course, Anthony Richardson. But the back end of the schedule, too, Kelly, for them as well. Like, they got one of the easier schedules. Look after that bye. Buccaneers, Titans, Bengals, Steelers, Falcons, Raiders, Texans.
Yeah.
Like, those are teams you can make an argument, especially a couple of them, I would say. We know the obvious candidates, but the Titans and the Raiders specifically make an argument that those two might be competing for a top five pick by the time we get to that portion of the season.
I think those are good bets in the worst record market. Yeah.
So since we're talking about the AFC South, there's two, we'll call them like extreme bets, I guess you want to call them. Like Jags to potentially win the one seed in the AFC, mm-hmm. Titans to finish with the worst record as well. I think those are two worth looking at because as we've talked about already, if the Tannehill decline continues and you have Will Levis, who you spent a somewhat high pick on, you're going to look around and go at some point, all right, if we're 1-5, whatever it is, we need to see what we have here. Mm-hmm. Let's turn this over and let's just see what Levis is. Let's just let him work out the kinks as the season goes along. It could lead to a season in which you find yourself, you know, in that 4-12, 3-14 range. Yep. Like, it could get really bad. Now, Vrabel's awesome, and he maximizes a lot of what that team has, but I think overall there are more realities in which that simulation comes out with a lot more outcomes on the bottom end like that than the record would indicate, that the probability would indicate when you look at the odds for a worse record.
Yeah, I agree. Those are two I've written down because I don't think we have anybody in Nevada yet that has that market.
You don't have to ask.
I literally have it written down though. I will be betting the Raiders and the Titans in that market because we've looked at that all summer. I think the odds that correlate with them, I think are.
By the way, I shouldn't just
off.
Say that. I'm going to go look.
I think they're way off. Like those are, I think they're absolutely prime candidates in the Titans as you broke it down. And just going back to the Colts real quick, I mean, that could be, we're talking midway through the season where the Titans might be completely switching things around and the Colts might be, and Anthony Richardson might be hitting his stride. You know, you talk about that soft end of the year schedule for the Colts. Well, Anthony Richardson at that point, that's basically a full college season. He'll have under his belt already. Maybe he's really putting things together when he's playing Steelers, Falcons, Raiders, Texans. could give your Colts a little bit of a nice run at the end.
By the way, that's why something in my memory said, don't say that. I think there's somebody out there. Circa does have most, at the very least, don't have one seed, but they do have most regular season losses, most regular season wins. Tennessee Titans 21-1 to finish with the most regular season losses.
I'm in.
Yeah. There is an outcome there. And the last team, then we didn't really spend any time on the Houston Texans. The Texans are a team that should be, at least from a personnel standpoint, they look like they could be a lot better, at least in comparison with what they were last season. Now, 6.5 does seem like a really high win total for me. Like to ask this team to go 7-10 or better, I think that's a little strong given what we look at with this roster and the questions about what you're going to have at quarterback. But when you tie in the schedule and what they have improvements, the improvements that they made on the roster, you can understand it. Like, especially that first column of the schedule before the bye, when you're talking about winnable games and coin flip spots, essentially, home versus the Colts, home versus the Steelers, on the road against the Falcons, home versus the Saints, those are some, and when you come back out of it with Panthers and Buccaneers, plus with the Cardinals there too, like, this is a schedule that at least gives them some opportunity that they're going to be able to take advantage of and go over. But I would rather err on the side of caution and look at this thing under 6.5. And I think the market's right in shading that under. 6.5 was pretty strong for me.
Yeah, I'm gonna split the difference kind of how you phrased it at the beginning. I'm like, the roster's better. I don't know if it's a lot better. And 6.5, I think, is a little too rich for me still.
All right, let's take our break. When we come back, we have plenty to get to. We'll get to those divisions and win totals in the NBA. And we'll talk about that team that I referenced that love what they did in the offseason and really do think that they have a shot to, yes, maybe even grab the one seed in the Eastern Conference.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
If you're a VSiN Pro subscriber, you got a lot of tools at disposal. One of those, of course, is the picks page. You can easily sort through picks, follow hosts and guest selections, and top VSiN expert leaderboards up there, too, so you can see who has the hot hand. One of just the many things that we have to offer up the website. Check it out now. Introductory offer, $19, VSiN.com/subscribe. One of the other things we offer, fantastic write-ups for when Adam Burke is going to be with us in about 15 minutes. To discuss Major League Baseball's second half and what we're looking ahead to tomorrow as the regular season resumes. Man, can I say, so I'm watching Wimbledon, and I know this is not like a unique thought, but it is incredible, as we were just talking about the National Football League, how our measurement system in that sport is old men running out to the field with chains. You know what I mean? And like measuring and like doing all that stuff. And like, they just showed the eagle eye thing and it was like this much grass in between like the line. They're like, out. I'm like, how do we,
how nice we, that would be.
We if have only, the technology.
If only we had the technology, JBT.
Like, it's whatever.
You just want to take people's jobs. Come on, man. Why are you trying to replace everybody's jobs? You know, what are those guys going to do
for efficiency? When look, in 20 years, when I'm replaced with an AI bot, it's just going to give you content.
20 years. Like 10, 4 years.
I thought you were saying, like, you think you're going to be around in this industry for that long? I was like, yeah, that's a good point. It's a lot of confidence in myself that I probably should not have. It's a very good point. All right. Let's talk about some of these. We have win totals up in the NBA. Pretty much in terms of big futures markets, everything is up for the association and multiple shops. But let's go to the Central Division. We don't have to guess anymore because I had to go through all the win totals last night and start writing, and we'll have an article up tomorrow. Got a little sidetracked with some shenanigans, shall we say, yesterday. So we'll have an article up analyzing what I have deemed the most intriguing win totals that have been posted. So the Central Division, again, for those who don't remember, because divisions don't matter anymore, the Milwaukee Bucks, the Cleveland Cavaliers, the Chicago Bulls, the Indiana Pacers, and anybody out there want to guess the fifth team in the Eastern Conference Central Division?
I mean, I'm looking at it.
Yeah, I know. I'm just like, Sean? Talking. I wonder if there's anybody in our audience that's like yelling at their screen or radio. It's like, you know, it's the Wizards. Like, no, it's the Detroit Pistons. So the Milwaukee Bucks, by the way, good on our crew for not throwing that up until I revealed the last one. You guys get the bit. -290 to win the division. The Milwaukee Bucks, Cleveland Cavaliers coming up second at +250. And then, of course, after that, Bulls 25-1, Pacers 35-1, Pistons 200-1. All reflected by the win totals as well. So here's my thing. I mentioned an Eastern Conference team. I love what they did. Think they have the potential to win a one seed in the East. I think there is a chance here, Kelly, that we talk about what Cleveland did in the offseason, much like we talked about what Denver did in the last offseason. For those who don't remember, the Nuggets, like, if you weren't paying attention last offseason, just made some moves, right? Bruce Brown, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, not really big names you're going to alter any power ratings or anything like that. But when you really dove into what they did, it was two pieces that fit perfectly with what they needed. They needed a 3-and-D type player that could help in terms of some of the more primary backcourt defensive matchups. That was Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. They needed another bench scorer who can, you know, facilitate, kind of fit next to Nikola Jokic in some of those minutes as well, do whatever they needed to do, handle the ball a little bit. That was Bruce Brown. Those guys fit perfectly, and those two were integral pieces to winning a championship the next year. I think what Cleveland did is potentially that. Where on the surface, George Niang and Max Strus, yeah, you know what? They don't really move the needle. They're not going to shift a power rating in any way. However, they really needed a knockdown shooter that was dangerous next to Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell. I apologize. The caffeine really didn't kick in this morning. You go back to the loss to the New York Knicks in that series. One of the things that you and I discussed that I had written about that we had talked about, which was, look, if you're the Knicks, one of the big weaknesses for Cleveland is their small forward, whether it be Isaac Okoro or Lamar Stevens. That's one of those matchups where you're like, shoot, we don't care. You can be the best defender. That's fine. But we're going to play off of you. We're going to help off of you. We're not going to close out on you. You are not a threat offensively. So when you get now replacement, all right, do you sacrifice a little defense to put like a Max Strus in there? Sure. But now all of a sudden you've got a guy out there where, oh, no, we've got to close out. Now now the floor spacing is way better. Now we have to account for this guy who's out there on the wing, and all of a sudden that opens it up for a backcourt like Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell. I think it fits perfectly. Niang, of course, adding a little bit more to the front court, a little bit more size, as well as being a knockdown shooter that can play next to Jarrett Allen if he needs to, that can play next to Evan Mobley in some of the smaller lineups. I absolutely love what Cleveland did, and I don't think it would be a surprise to see them have another really strong regular season and win a one seed. Almost comparable to what we're talking about with Jacksonville, where do I think Cleveland should be the best team in the Eastern Conference, power rating-wise? No. But would I not be surprised with some pretty solid health that those two pieces fit perfectly and they rip off a bunch of regular season wins? I would not be surprised at all.
Yeah, no, I'm totally with you. I think that is a little bit of a under-the-radar team this offseason, probably because of the way they were ousted in the playoffs for the most part. You know, this was a team that, I mean, they were basically a top 10 offensive and defensive team throughout the entire regular season last year. You know, finished the regular season 51-31, fourth in the Eastern Conference, just get bounced by the Knicks in that first round. I had bet on them in that first round. It was a really, really poor performance by them. And those shooting struggles really reared their head in that series, like you said. So
they shot 32% from three against the Knicks.
Brutal. It was brutal. So, I mean, I think those are major additions to a team that, again, won 51 games last year. So we look at that win total, 49.5, and, okay, I'm thinking, hey, this is a team I liked last year. They got better this offseason, in my opinion. And the win total set at high, you know, at under with the amount of wins that they got last year. I haven't bet it yet, JVT, but I'm pretty sure this is going to end up being a bet on the over on the win total for the Cavs for me. The division odds, though, I have no interest in. Well, plus, I would need longer.
You love the Bucks.
I love the Bucks. I would just need more than plus 250.
Because here's the other thing. I think the other aspect that ties into this for a team like Cleveland is you can make the argument that the teams ahead of them have gotten worse.
Right? Sure.
You did take a piece from the Philadelphia 76ers. It does look like Philly might be shipping off James Harden. We don't know what they're going to get in return. We don't know what that team's going to look like. The Boston Celtics, I don't think there's really a question. Their depth got worse, and if they do take a hit injury-wise, you are asking a lot, I think, of some guys down low on that roster that are going to be, I think, somewhat questionable. And yes, the Bucks won 58 games. Running it back, though, with a roster at certain parts that's aging a bit, that's having some availability issues all of a sudden, that's maybe becoming a little bit stale, and whose only big additions to the roster were Jay Crowder and Malik Beasley, I think there's a really strong case to be made that while they ascended, the teams ahead of them kind of came back down to earth ever so slightly, enough to make up that gap. And again, this is the important part, and if you get some good health luck in that regard over the course of 82 games. And I think that's the argument you're making. Mm-hmm. I think there's a universe that you're looking and potentially going like alt win total over 51.5 at a plus price for Cleveland to potentially go ahead and have a really strong season. But I think they have the makings of a really, really strong regular season team. And as far as some of these others, so I think there's another intriguing here team too, Kelly, where if we're talking about some alternate win totals, DeMar DeRozan's on an expiring contract. The Chicago Bulls are essentially running back a team that finished 40-42 last season. They're, I think offensively, I don't understand what's going to happen here with this team.
Yeah.
You know, like you go and get Javon Carter, okay, and then that's going to be with Alex Caruso. You're going to have a really good defensive backcourt, but you don't know where some of the offense and creation is coming from. And if this team, which it likely is going to be, well below 500 and looking around at the trade deadline going, well, we got this guy that's going to have some value on an aspiring deal. DeMar DeRozan could be gone mm-hmm. by the time you get past the trade deadline. Chicago is one of those squads that I really do think there's a reality in which they're going to find themselves in the midst of a very, very rough year.
Yeah, me too. That is one that I actually made this bet yesterday. I made two bets yesterday. The other one I'll bring up because we talked about it yesterday is the Raptors under. I played the Raptors under 37.5. I played the Bulls under 37.5 as well. Raptors much bigger though, because I just dipped my toe in the waters with the Bulls. I'm a little intrigued to see what else they might do here still before the season starts. Kind of as you hit on, the Vucevic re-signing is a little bit confusing, right? Because it's we thought this is either going to be you're gonna blow up this team, maybe ship off Zach LaVine, like you said, DeMar DeRozan, he's on last year of his deal, so maybe they keep him and trade him near the trade deadline. I kind of thought something like that would occur, but with Vooch coming back, it's okay, you're just running this whole thing back again. I'm not really sure. I'm not really excited about this team all that much, even if they do, so that's why I played it small. But yeah, I think there's still a chance Zach LaVine gets traded here before the season starts. And if that's the case, I think this Bulls team's really going to struggle next season. So yeah, that is one I did already play already. Raptors, I played pretty aggressively yesterday at under 37.5 as well.
Yeah, a shout out to Corbin who tweeted into the show that he loved the story of me sleeping under a pool table with an oven mitt as a pillow. We've all been there.
All been there.
He noted that he went to a bachelor party and fell asleep on a hardwood floor with a couple of pizza boxes. I would assume the pizza boxes were blankets. That's the other thing.
Blankets or pillow in that situation.
Yeah.
I mean, if you stack two pizza boxes, I could sleep on that.
I think
as a
you
pillow.
Could do this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, like, the pizza boxes, could use as warmth. Because that's the other tricky part about falling asleep in places you're not familiar with. It's getting a blanket. I very much need a blanket at all times to sleep. I feel very I feel very naked if I don't sleep with a blanket.
I'd rather have a pillow than a blanket.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I mean, the time with the oven mitt, I fell asleep without the blanket.
Barry Sanders didn't need no blanket.
No,
that's
he didn't.
For sure. Come on.
Wait, and he was doing one of those things with this. Yeah, you probably had that sensation that you know what I mean when you're falling and you're like, oh my god. All right, let's Adam Burke's gonna join us next. Let's ask him, where's the weirdest place you fell asleep?
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We all know about the speed of sound, but have you ever thought about the sounds of speeding? If you drive too fast, you could hear the sound of your vehicle crashing because one way or another, speeding catches up with you. Paid for by NHTSA. Jonathan Von Tobel filling in for Gil Alexander on a numbers game today. Let's head out and welcome in our next guest, friend of the program, dare I say, one Adam Burke. Adam, good morning. Appreciate the time. I'm going to open with this. It was a conversation we had. The weirdest place you have fallen asleep in your life, where?
Wow. Well, good morning, boys, first. The weirdest place I've fallen asleep.
It's a hard-hitting question to start the day, Adam.
Oh, you know what? Actually, so the first time we came to Vegas, we did one of those timeshare presentations, and we got tickets for Phantom of the Opera. I don't remember if it was a Wynn or Venetian, but I fell asleep there.
Like during the show?
One. That's a good one.
During the show.
Yeah. Wow, that's interesting. So if it's the one I'm thinking of, because I've been to Phantom of the Opera, my wife likes that stuff, so I took her. And the one we went to had a big fake chandelier that fell from the ceiling as part of the act. Ah, that's a good place to fall asleep. All right, I'm down.
That's a good one.
Yep. By the way, I hate musicals too. I don't know if I'm assuming you don't like musicals, but I'm kind of out on stuff like that. All right, good start. All right, Adam. Well, we're not going to fall asleep on the second half of the MLB season. So I want to ask you, we have a full slate of games tomorrow, but this is kind of like a vague and open-ended question, but it's team specific. Top of your list, what are you looking for as we start the second half? Is it a regression for a certain team? Is it an ascension from a certain team? Is it player regression? What is one thing at the top of your list that you are waiting to find out as we start the second half of the MLB season?
Yeah, I think there are a few things, actually. If I narrowed it down to one, I really want to bet on the Detroit Tigers in the second half, which I know sounds ludicrous because they're just not a very good baseball team, but they've had a competent major league rotation on the injured list basically all season long. They just got Tarek Skubal back. Eduardo Rodriguez came back. Matt Manning has been back as well. So their starting pitching has gotten substantially better over the last couple of weeks just from guys coming back from injury. So I think they will be an undervalued team that's worth playing, whether it's taking some first fives with those guys. I know they just threw the combined no-hitter the other day, but maybe taking some first fives, some plus 1.5 run lines when they're in big underdog situations, stuff like that. Their pitching staff will be dramatically better in the second half if those guys are able to stay healthy. So that's a team that I'm actually looking to hopefully make some money on that I think could be undervalued as we go forward.
Is that a pitching staff that, it, like, as we move to the trade deadline, is that one that's going to get picked apart? Like, Eduardo Rodriguez was a guy that was obviously thrown out there at the beginning part of the year that could have some value. Are guys like him in danger of being shipped off?
I think a guy like Michael Lorenzen possibly could be, but other than that, I mean, a lot of these are younger guys that they have that they're trying to, you know, kind of figure out what they have. Reese Olson's been a guy that's been pretty interesting in a bulk capacity that maybe he, you know, winds up having a pretty good second half. But, you know, Rodriguez is a guy still under a contract where he's had some injury issues. He had some personal stuff that kept him away from the team last season. I don't think he's a super tradable contract for them. But the young guys like Manning and Skubal, those are guys that they want to try to build around. So I don't think that there'll be a team picked apart at the trade deadline. They don't really have a ton to offer, maybe some relievers, something like that, which is another reason why I'd look at first fives. But they don't really have a whole lot of currency that they can move around at the deadline here.
So the other team that stuck out to me that because there's a lot of things you can bet on now as we head into the second half. You still have some regular season win totals that are up. So the St. Louis Cardinals, right now, they are 38-52, Adam. There seems to be maybe some increased rumblings that this team could potentially start to sell themselves. What do you make of that? Have you read anything that that would be the case? And if that is the case, their win total right now is 75.5. That would look to me like an underplay if this is a team that is already underwhelming as it stands right now and willing to ship off some of their better pieces.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, look, you know, this is a team that just everyone kind of has been waiting and waiting and waiting for them to get it going, and it hasn't happened, and I don't think that it's going to. And when you look at the starting pitching market that's out there, you know, because the Phillies got back into the race, Aaron Nola, who is an impending free agent, probably won't go anywhere. Milwaukee still has as good of a chance in the Central Division as they did probably before the season, so Corbin Burns probably won't go anywhere. And I think the Guardians will still be reluctant to trade Shane Bieber, although they probably shouldn't be. So Jordan Montgomery and Jack Flaherty are two guys that look very, very attractive on the trade market here. Montgomery specifically, I would say he's pretty much a lock to get traded. He's a free agent at the end of the year. Flaherty is as well. And I don't see the Cardinals really committing long-term dollars to him. So I think Flaherty and Montgomery will absolutely go. The question is who else goes? I mean, could St. Louis trade a Paul Goldschmidt? I think that's very, very much a possibility. Could they trade one of their younger position players to maybe get a young starting pitcher, maybe a swap with Cleveland where they get, say, a Logan Allen, somebody like that? I think that's a possibility as well. The Cardinals are very, very much open for business. This is a rare spot for them, though, because they've had, what, two losing seasons, I think, in the last 25 years. So I think if you're John Mozeliak and the rest of the front office, as much as it stinks to be as bad as they are, you have to capitalize on this situation and get better from the minor league system up. And I think they can do that via trade. And I think they absolutely will.
All right, let's stay in the division. Right now, as it stands, Cincinnati has a one-game lead over Milwaukee. Milwaukee, though, the odds-on favorite ever so slightly at DraftKings at minus 110. They are now in the midst of a stretch two, Adam. You know, we pull into the first half. A stretch where, of five series, they're going to play three against one another here as we enter the second half. They got two coming up. So what do we make of this division race? Because these next couple of weeks are going to be very impactful. Are the Brewers still, rightfully so, the odds-on favorite to win this division with the Reds in the way that they have played as of late?
Yeah, I mean, the schedule is tricky. They come out of the break, play Milwaukee right away, four with the Giants, who are a very good team. Arizona's a team that I'm kind of looking to fade in the second half, so maybe that'll be an opportunity for me to bet on Cincinnati in that series coming up here next weekend. But then, as you mentioned, Milwaukee again, they play three against the Dodgers on the road. Then it maybe softens up a little bit for them. Look, I mean, offensively, this team is clearly, very clearly, the best in the division. It's kind of a matter to me of, does Andrew Abbott keep doing what he's doing? Can Brandon Williamson keep going out there and avoid getting blown up and give this team a chance to win more often than not? Is Graham Ashcraft going to be any good whatsoever in the second half? And how quickly can they get Hunter Green and Nick Lodolo back? what they've done to this point, missing Green and Lodolo over the last few weeks, is thoroughly impressive. And the other thing about Cincinnati, because they've developed so well from within, even though they graduated McLean and De La Cruz and Steer to the big leagues and Christian Encarnacion Strand will come soon, they still have enough second-tier prospects that they can be a buyer here at the trade deadline. I don't know that Milwaukee has a whole lot that they can move around to try and add, because when Burns is gone, Brandon Woodruff's getting older, they may not want to mortgage too much of the future. I think Cincinnati is in a position to do that with guys that aren't at the big league level yet. So I think the Reds, if they want to, if ownership will sign off on it, can be the more aggressive team. And I do think Cincinnati ultimately does win that division.
So let's tie in the Reds on one more thing. One of the most, I think one of the more irritating topics that come up in an NBA season for me, Adam, is with some of these awards, specifically when you get like Rookie of the Year, right? Where you'll get a rookie that gets off to a strong, you know, a really strong start, is very consistent throughout an entire year. But then you get another rookie, Jabari, I think it was, Jalen Smith at the end of last year, who had a really strong second half. And people were like, you know, he could be Paolo Banchero. Wasn't the case. I'm bringing that up because I want to compare it with the race between Corbin Carroll and Ellie De La Cruz. There's a reality, I think, right, where the market and bettors are all over this. Like, hey, watch out. Ellie De La Cruz could win this thing. And the price on Carroll becomes a little bit cheaper, right? Like, Carroll's going to win this thing if he maintains play, because Ellie De La Cruz has not played enough. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, I think Carroll just had so much of a head start on him. But, you know, of course, the shoulder issue. I mean, you know, that seems like it's something that possibly could linger a little bit. Maybe the All-Star break helps him. It is a shoulder that he had surgically repaired a couple of years ago, but that threw a massive scare into a lot of people, not only seeing the injury, but then seeing Torey Lovullo throw him right back in there the next night, which seemed to make no sense whatsoever. Carroll should still win this award. I mean, Carroll was, still second for the MVP, second or third in the National League. I mean, to be up there and not win the Rookie of the Year would be ludicrous. What Ellie De La Cruz is doing is awesome, and he's a human highlight reel, but Carroll's numbers are off the charts good. He basically led the National League in F-War in the first half as a rookie, which is incredible. So it's his award to lose, and if he gets hurt, he could very well lose it. But yeah, I agree with you. I think at minus 300, we're starting to get to a point where maybe he is sort of worth the investment, despite the fact that De La Cruz, you know, is so exciting and has grabbed so many headlines here.
All right, last minute. I have been adamant. I don't think people understand the Artie Moreno dynamic of it. Ohtani's not going anywhere at the trade deadline, correct? I'm right about this?
I mean, look, the baseball decision is to trade him. The Artie Moreno decision is, I don't want to be the guy who traded Shohei Ohtani, because Moreno already has enough kind of going on in the PR realm. So I don't know. I would trade him. I would absolutely trade him. I would get the best return I possibly could, because my farm system is terrible and the Angels farm system has been bad for a very long time.
Whoa.
But I don't know. I mean, I don't know if he'll ultimately sign off on it. He should, but he probably won't, and it'll be to the organization's detriment for several years to come.
The Artie Moreno, the guy who took his team off the market because he was mad everybody was happy he was selling it? Nah, he would never do that. Adam Burke, good to talk to you, man. Thanks, buddy.
Have a good one, guys.
Skating Tripods up on Twitter. Yeah, at the base, I would agree with that. Baseball move, yes. Artie Moreno move, absolutely not. All right, we'll come back, wrap it up, last 10 minutes here on A Numbers Game.
VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks, unleashes the spirit of Las Vegas with BetMGM Rewards. Every time you make a wager at BetMGM, you can earn BetMGM Rewards points that you can redeem for online bonus credits like bonus bets and bet insurance tokens. If you're planning a trip to Vegas, you can also convert your MGM points into MGM Rewards points that you can use towards dining, shows, and hotel rooms at over 20 MGM Resorts properties located on the Vegas Strip and nationwide. Eligibility restrictions apply. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Offer resources to help you make appropriate choices. Got to visit BetMGM.com for terms and be 21. New and existing customer offer. Promotion subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets, which expire in 7 days. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? 1-800-GAMBLER. Last couple of minutes here on A Numbers Game, filling in for Gil Alexander today. All right, let's go to you first. Got the update? I was going to, no.
Let's do it.
Scottish Open. I'll say it in my normal voice.
Ben on, he's still up top. Although.
All right, we're done.
Davis Riley on the move. Oh, here's smokes. A putt for birdie right now live.
I know.
That's going to go to 7-under. Through 10. So, 7-under through 10 for Davis Riley.
So they're murking this course right now, huh?
Yeah, they really are. Look at that. That is...
Holy smokes. He had a stretch of 5 straight birdies. Birdied in, what, 7 out of...
7 of 8, yeah. Oh, 7 God. Of 8. So, yeah, that's pretty dang good for Davis 10. Riley. So, yeah, he is in second place by himself right now, 7-under through 10. And then it is still Dietrich Rory, 6-under. K.H. Lee in the clubhouse, 5-under. Julian Brun... 5-under through 15. Yannick Paul, 5-under through 14. Those guys are still on the course, obviously. And then a bunch at 4-under par, both in the clubhouse and on the course. Let's see, some notables, Max Homa and Tom Kim, both 4-under par, still out on the course. Sam Burns, 3-under in the clubhouse. Wyndham Clark, Ricky Fowler, both 3-under par, out on the course. They're both through 12.
That's not bad.
So even Ricky playing well.
Your boy Tyrell Hatton just hit, it looked like an approach shot, but like lost his wedge. So it looked like he was pretty pissed, but he landed it on the green. So.
Yeah, that's Tyrell Hatton. He's always mad.
Okay.
Which Tyrell. I don't know, I kind of love.
Unless of course I'm watching and he landed on the green of a different hole. Because then of course that would be, then I can understand why he's upset.
Yeah, that would be bad. Tyrell Hatton's that guy though, that he will throw a fit and you're like, oh no, did you just hit it into the water? And then he puts it like 10 feet from the pin. And you're like, I would kill to be able to do something like that.
Man, it looks pretty clear out. I mean, obviously we can't see wind. But given like what we're seeing right now.
It's blowing. You'll notice the flags are blowing.
Flags are blowing. Yeah, that's a good point. Yep. That thing's moving pretty good. Huh. So far, they're killing it at least. So what would you expect in terms of what does the weather project for tomorrow?
Oh, tomorrow. I mean, most of this weekend's supposed to be pretty gross.
Looks nice to me. I'd like to be out there. Victor Hovland, 2-over. Oof.
Actually, Friday, the wind tomorrow morning is supposed to calm down a bit as of right now.
So would that be like a first wave, second wave thing? Like
well,
if
that,
the wind...
So that's what I was talking about yesterday when we were breaking down the tournament. At first, it looked like this afternoon it was going to be a little calmer and Friday morning was going to be calmer. I thought there'd be a little PM, AM wave advantage, but today it's now supposed to be just windy all day out there. So I think that's why you're seeing, we saw Ben On go low early. We're seeing Davis Riley do it now in the kind of afternoon wave here this afternoon. So I think the conditions have been pretty much the same for everybody today, which is what you want to see a tournament be fair to everybody. It just sometimes it lines up not that way with the weather.
So here's my question then. If we assume that it's going to play like this, right, where low scores are achievable,
mm-hmm.
that would also mean then that guys that are like 2 or 3 under after one round, there's still going to be plenty of time for them to get back into this thing if this course plays the way that it does the rest of the week, right?
Yeah,
there's going to be more scoring volatility.
Because
then there's also the off chance that these guys then continue to murder the course and they stretch out so far that you can't catch up with them.
Yeah, I would think, though, that when we're with this being in Scotland and weather can change on a dime like that, JVT, this is the – I think going as low as you can today while the course is scored. And there's not a ton – that they can do to make this course a whole lot tougher, but they can. This course is one that they can lengthen or shorten a little bit, because they do that depending on how bad the wind's going to be. So they could lengthen this course a bit for tomorrow's round or this weekend. They usually wait to the weekend to make any drastic changes like that, but they could lengthen the course a bit, put tougher pin positions, although it usually doesn't matter on greens like this as much, but they could still put some tougher pin positions in, toughen this up a bit. So if I'm looking at it, those guys that are getting out to a fast start today, like a Davis Riley, like a Ben On, like a Rory, you're putting yourself in a really good position for the rest of the week, because if the weather starts getting ugly, then you want to have as big a lead as you can on the field.
In between rounds, what statistics are you looking at that would be indicators of over-the-head play and indicators that a guy got unlucky and could be due for a much better second round?
Yeah, you know, when you take away you always got to take out of the equation the best and worst putters that are just always the best and worst putters in the field. But putting has the highest variance in golf. That is the one statistic that you see swing the most. That you usually guys who win tournaments every week, they had a better than their average putting week. That is almost always the case. So
the putter is the 3-point shot of golf.
Yeah, basically, yeah. So when you see when you see a guy, you know, throughout the tournament, and this could be after first round, second round, I usually don't get involved in tournament round betting until third round. Usually, I usually don't even do it in the second round because I want at least two rounds of data to go off of. But what you're looking for is those guys who might be an average putter or a slightly below average putter who putted amazing the first day or two, that you're going to kind of expect, okay, over the next couple rounds, that's going to regress a bit back to their baseline. And you could target them in some head-to-head matchups. So usually that's what I'll take into account. The guys, what you want to see them doing well, especially at this course, is off the tee means a little bit more at this course than it does at others. So guys that are hitting it, putting it in the fairway today and hitting it far, especially in this wind, is something I'd look at. And then always approach. You want to find the guys who are dialed in with their irons this week, because the closer you put it to the pin, it makes that putting easier and easier. Go up there and make a birdie instead of a par. That's what wins tournaments.
Yeah, the reason I was asking too is because you've said it before. Matt said it before. Matt Brown, right? You want like two rounds of data to go off of as you move. Your larger sample size of data gives you a more clear picture. I was more looking at it from the perspective of, if there were matchups of two guys that had extremes in one mm-hmm. round, you know, looking to play on that dynamic as you moved into the second day. By the way, Ricky Fowler birdie, so he's 4 under. So
whew.
Continuing to play pretty well. Pretty good golf, huh?
Ricky can't stop. He is 9-1 live right now to win the whole dang thing. Rory plus 360. Ben on 7-1. Max Homa, Davis Riley 14-1. Tom Kim, Wyndham Clark, Tyrrell Hatton, Scottie Scheffler all 18-1.
Live. We're going to bet some nose here at this point. Let's go.
Some nose?
Yeah.
Yeah, like on Ben On.
Yeah, Ben On, yeah.
Like minus 1,500, yeah.
It's still pretty, yeah, it's first round, so it'd still be pretty high. You want to get that a little bit further along. All right. There you go, Hatton. See, you're fine.
Par for Tyrrell.
Yeah, say,
yeah we
parred.
Need to pick it up. We yeah, need
I don't
to
know why
pick
I said
it
that you parred. You're so angry.
You're just getting
it.
Into the spirit.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I was not trying to be like an offensive. I said it weird. I was not trying to be an imitation of a Scottish accent at that. All right, so with that, as we give you your Scottish Open preview or update. There it is. What do you want to do here? We got Wemby props. We've got,
you know, let's hit the Wembanyama stuff quick.
Okay, cool. So I can just poop all over and just be like, everybody chill. Like the expectations
exactly.
are insane.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. So we have the Wembanyama on the board. These are all different things tied into Victor Wembanyama. He is now minus 130 to win Rookie of the Year. That has come back down. He still shouldn't be odds on favorite. To win, he could be the favorite. I'm just saying you should not be laying a price at this point. To win Defensive Player of the Year, 35-1. To score 40-plus points in any game, you're getting 3-1. To average 20 or more points and 2-plus blocks per game at plus 185. I don't think people realize how hard that is to do, and it's only plus 185. To average 20 or more points and to average 20 and 10 his rookie year, plus 240. Again, don't really realize how hard that is. Spurs, 35 or more regular season wins, plus 190. And then Spurs to win the West and Spurs to win the NBA Finals, 100 and 200-1, respectfully.
This is the part of the show where Gil normally asks me, so are there no options for this? And I say, no, there's not. There's only this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, we'll put it this way. Go back to the 20 and 10 prop, right? Plus 240 is a ridiculous number to bet on a rookie to average 20 and 10. His rookie, you know, his rookie season. Of course, there's not a no on that, because you know how much action you'd get on the no.
Yep.
If it was plus 240.
On all of these, yes. I mean, if there might actually be a shop that hangs out a yes no price on Rookie of the Year for him.
Oh, like
that,
I mean,
would bet.
That would be if to get it to get plus 110.
Yeah.
On no, like the field.
Yeah.
Versus Victor Wembanyama to win Rookie of the Year. Absolutely, absolutely. Because here's the other thing. Again, the Spurs, by all accounts, are going to treat this with kid gloves. Like, they're going to be pretty, like, easy with his workload and everything like that. Yeah, no.
I think there's just a lot of those things, though, that people need to understand. Where it's a guy that is coming over. He's still 19 years old. He's a guy that played in a league that played two less minutes per quarter. It's the same thing as what we see in the summer league. It's what they played in France. It's going to be a heavy workload that this guy has to get used to. And with him being at still such a young age and physical development that needs to occur, that's just my warning, JVT, because mm-hmm. I think you're right. I think they're going to take this very slow with Victor this year.
All right, that does it for us here on A Numbers Game. Appreciated as always. If you want to check out any part of the show that you missed, VSiN.com/podcast, and anything we have at the website, VSiN.com. Check out that NFL Summer Special. We'll see you.